And so we have this reification, this grasping, the strong grasping onto this person really exists from his own side inherently. When that's there, and you witness a person suffering, sometimes the very fact that you're taking this person to be so real, so inherently real, can actually enhance the depth of compassion. Likewise, in religious practice, if one is really apprehending the object of one's devotion, faith, Buddha or God, any type of religious object devotion, if you really think it's real, that's grasping, that reification of the object of your devotion. So real, of course, that word doesn't
objectively
need to be crossed.
Objectively,
inherently, inherently real. Not just real, because of course the glass of water is real. So we don't want to pretend that things are not real at all. But inherently real. So even when you say people are devoid of inherent personal identity, they're still real. I mean, you're still here, you're as real as anybody else. But the point here is, as for compassion, likewise for faith, if there is this reification or this objectification of the object of your compassion or your faith, that can actually enhance the compassion and the faith. Now, that same individual who starts with that level of compassion, faith, while it's imbued with reification or objectification, as that person starts to study the teachings on emptiness and starts to gain some glimmer, insight of the absence of that purely objective, inherently existent nature of the object of compassion or the object of faith, it can happen in some cases that the compassion, the faith, may temporarily somewhat attenuate, decrease a little bit, and then it needs to be revived from a deeper and deeper level. This is really Buddhist talk. This is within the Buddhist framework. But if one is going to cultivate compassion to its highest possible level, to its culmination, then it really must be imbued with wisdom that sees the nature of reality itself. You will not get to the highest level of compassion still imbued with some type of a misconstrual or a reification of reality. So that's only a temporary attenuation of compassion, and then it gets into second gear and then goes much further than it would otherwise.
But if you are asking for kind of, you know, proof at the level of the brain mechanism or biochemistry, then we don't have it
yet. Not yet.
This is not yet an evidence.
That is your responsibility, not our responsibility.
Well, we need to understand it from both sides. So,
However, from the Buddhist point of view, one, I suppose, the point of departure from neuroscience would be that, from the Buddhist point of view, no matter how minute a level of neurons or at the cellular level or genetic level, it is still part of matter. So, by the very nature of its physicality, there would be a limit. Whereas the mental qualities... So no matter how subtle level one may, you know, get at, the very fact of its physicality will limit it in terms of potential. So it will be finite. The potential will be finite. In contrast,
in what situation? I'm not sure I understand the situation in which it will be finite is
for its development. That's the point.
Now, so conceptualizing it as
no, in terms of the development of its potential. For the example will come, whereas the mental qualities, given that it is so, the mental qualities will have the potential for limitless development enhancement. So, for example, like compassion or loving kindness, and so on. And so, this is Isolin was saying that he's really citing a 7th century Buddhist thinker, Dharmakirti, the Nalanda thinker, who gave the contrast by means of an analogy that no matter how How much training a highest athlete may engage in, say, for example, a sprinter or a jumper, a long jumper. No matter how great an athlete he or she may be, and no matter how long he or she may train, there will be a finite potential, beyond which that person simply wouldn't be able to jump. And also, no matter how much you boil the water, there will be an optimal level, a finite level. Whereas, in contrast, qualities like compassion and loving kindness, and the qualities that are grounded upon the mind, have the, at least in principle, the potential for limitless enhancement.
Well, this may indicate that in certain domains there's limitless neuroplasticity.
When you were speaking of the state of empathy, so you comprehend and the suffering, you spoke of it as largely a mental state. What would be the emotional state associated with that mental state?
Yes, one component. I mean, the problem with this is me speaking. The problem with the problem is partly due to language and conceptual kind of map, because we don't have a term for emotion in the Buddhist psychology.
The question is there a term in Sanskrit for emotion?
It's the same as bhava, like a phenomena. Bhava.
Yes.
So to translate, yes, there is, from the Western psychological point of view, a component of that mental state which is emotional, and in fact, compassion has a very strong emotional, a state, and one of the characteristics of that state of mind is the inability to bear the suffering that you are perceiving. So there's a very strong emotional component, and so that's referred to as the inability to bear the suffering that you are perceiving.